Good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Gittin daf Nun Aleph. We left off on Nun Amud Beis at the two dots, about three quarters of the way down the Amud, the two dots, Ein Motzi and Lachilas Peros. So today we're going to conclude in the Gemara the discussion that we began with the Mishnah a couple of days ago, the various takanas because of Tikkun Olam, regarding the types of property that certain people who are owed obligations by others can collect with. So already we've been discussing that the notion that somebody who is damaged by somebody else, he gets to collect from the best property, a regular balchov, somebody who is owed money by somebody else gets to collect from middle range, and a woman, when she collects her ksuba, gets to collect from the lower range. We had seen that when somebody collects from yesomim, they collect from the lowest level of karka, from the karka that's called ziboris. And then the Mishnah concluded by telling us that there were some types of people who can only collect what is owed to them from unencumbered property, from nechasim b'nei chorin, and not from nechasim mishubadim. So that's the first topic in the Gemara. We're going to talk about achilas peros, shvach karkos, mazon isha banos. We're going to explain what all those things are. And then the daf is going to conclude with a discussion that's going to take us for the entirety of Nun Aleph Amud Beis, the concept that we concluded the Mishnah with of hamotzi mitzia, lo yishav avnei tikkun olam, that if somebody returns a lost object, we don't make him swear, even if he's only returning half of what the owner claimed he lost, because of tikkun olam. Again, the tikkun olam aspect is we don't want to disincentivize somebody from returning a lost object, and therefore we're not going to impose a shvua on that person. So again, we left off the two dots about three quarters of the way down on Nun Amud Beis, ein motzi en la'achilas peros. So what are achilas peros? So before we get into the discussion in the Gemara about why, we need to know what we're talking about. So the scenario is like this. You have somebody who steals a piece of property, and then he sells that stolen piece of property to a buyer. So a buyer buys a piece of property from a seller. As far as the buyer is concerned, he's buying a regular piece of property. The only problem is the seller never really owned the property. The seller stole the property, so the buyer bought stolen property. Okay, so he buys a stolen property. He works the field. The field generates payros. He improves the field. In the meantime, comes the original owner of the stolen property, and he wants to collect that property from the buyer. And he can, because the buyer never actually owned the property, because the buyer bought it from a ganav. The buyer bought it from a thief. The mocher never had title to the property. So the real owner of the property comes to the buyer, and he collects the property. Now the question is, the buyer definitely needs recourse from somebody. The buyer definitely needs to go to the seller who sold stolen property, and he could say, hey seller, you owe me money because I paid you for property that you never owned. So this property was confiscated from me, therefore you owe me money. So the question is, what is he allowed to collect from the seller and how? So what we're going to see in the Gemara is that the actual cost of the land that he bought from the seller, he is allowed to collect not only from the seller, if the seller has unencumbered property, but also from other buyers of the seller. In other words, if the seller at one point owned other property, sold that other property to somebody else, then the buyer of the stolen property is allowed to go back to those other purchasers and collect the value of the property from those purchasers. Why? Because it's well known that whenever somebody sells property, they sell property ba'achrayas nechasim, meaning that they sell with the knowledge that if there's ever a problem and if the sale ever has to be reversed, not only are they standing behind the sale in as much as they must compensate from unencumbered property, but everybody knows that the seller will have to compensate even from encumbered property. And therefore, anybody else who buys from a seller knows that if this guy sold other pieces of land, I am at risk. As a buyer from the seller, I am at risk of having another buyer come and collect the sale price from me. However, what about the payros? What about if the buyer bought the land? The land was worth $100. He paid $100 for the land, but now he improved the land, and the land now generates payros. So when the buyer loses all that, because when the original owner of the property comes, he simply confiscates the field, he takes everything back. So now the buyer goes to the seller, and the buyer wants to collect not only the value, not only the $100 that he paid for the property, but also the $50 of payros that are on the property. So the question is, can he collect the $50 in respect of the payros from other buyers of the seller, from nechasim mishubadim, or can he only collect from nechasim b'nei chorin? So what our Mishnah told us is you can only collect achilas peros and shvach karkos from nechasim B'nei Chorin and not Mechasim Mishubadim because of Tikkun HaOlam. So the Gemara is going to ask, what is the Tikkun HaOlam purpose for saying that the buyer of the stolen land can collect the value of the land from the seller's other buyers, but he can only collect the value of the payrolls from the seller himself, not from the seller's other buyers? Why can't he seek recourse against the seller's other buyers? Says the Gemara, my taima, Amar Ula, Amar Eish Lakish, Lefisha Ein Aksuvin, because he never sold them with Achrayas Nechasim. In other words, that says Rashi, that when a person sells a piece of property, he sells it Vachrayas Nechasim. In other words, it's written into the Shtar, I am standing behind this sale, inasmuch as if the sale is ever reversed, you can come after me and any property that I own now, even if I subsequently sell it. So everybody knows that when somebody sells property, it's a sale with achrayas, and everybody knows that to the extent the seller has other pieces of property that he sells, a buyer who ultimately is jolted out of the sale, who actually has the property confiscated, everybody knows that there's a risk that the buyer may come after him, may come after another buyer of property from the seller in order to have land confiscated. However, the payros that are grown on the land, those are not written into the shtar. In other words, the seller never assumed achrayas for those payros. And because the seller never assumed achrayas for those payros, it's not fair to a subsequent purchaser of other property from the seller that this buyer should go collect from them, because they never knew about these payros, so they never assumed the risk. It's all a question of assumption of risk. If there's an explicit assumption of risk, you could collect from Nechasim Mishubadim. If there's no explicit assumption of risk, then you can only collect from Nechasim Bnei Chorin. And therefore, this halacha of not being able to collect the value of payros from other purchasers of the seller only applies to payros that didn't exist at the time of the sale. Because if the payros existed at the time of the sale, and everybody knows that he sold a property with all this payros, with some certain of payros on the property, then it turns out that what was written into the shtar, what the seller accepted achrayas on, was not only the property, but also the payros that existed at the time of the property, and therefore all other purchasers are on notice that they may have their own property disgorged if that buyer of the stolen property ultimately comes and tries to collect from them. However, produce that grows on the piece of property after the purchase, there's no way for the other purchasers from the seller to know that that existed, and therefore it's not fair to have the purchaser of the stolen property collect the achilas peros, the shvach karkos, from those other purchasers. So that is why, because they're not written down, the other purchasers never assumed achrayas. So says the Gemara, Amarle Rabbi Abba Lu'ula, but said Rabbi Abba Tu'ula, Vamozon Aisha Vabanos, but Mozon Aisha Vabanos, which is a commitment that a husband takes upon himself in order to support his wife and his daughters, Kamandichsivi Dami, that it's as if they are written down. Why is it as if they're written down? Because says Rashi, it's a Tanai Basin, and whenever a person gets married, every person gets married as a Ksuba. And therefore, everybody knows that if you're buying from a guy who's married and that person has obligations under a ksuba, which every married man does, then you should know that he has an obligation to support his wife and to support his children. And therefore, it should be as if you're always buying on notice that the husband may need the property back or he may need money in order to satisfy his support obligation for his wife and children. Yet, it's as if it's written down because everybody knows that it exists because there is a Tanai based in that you have to support your wife and your children. V'ktani ein motzien. But we also said, one of the other things in the mission that we said was that ein motzien mazon ha'isha v'abanos ela menechasim b'nei chorin and not nechasim mishavadim. But if everybody knows that this liability exists, and it's as if this liability was written down, why can't you collect from the Chasim Mishubadim? You should be able to collect from the Chasim Mishubadim. Says the Gemara, Amar Lei, Hasam Eikara, Chiyitkin, Ksuvin Ein Eitzel B'nei Chorim, Ein Ksuvin Ein Eitzel Mishubadim. That's part and parcel of the Tanai Basin. In other words, you're asking me, why can't I collect from the Chasim Mishubadim? It's a Tanai Basin. It's as if it's written down. It's as if everybody accepted Achrayas. No, the original Tanai Basin was that, yes, the husband has to support the wife and kids. However, that support obligation can only be enforced. It can only be collected from unencumbered property, not from encumbered property. That was the Tanai based in itself. Because they're not written down, that's why you don't accept liability. Why isn't Mazon Isha Vabanos? It's as if they're written down, yet we see that you're not allowed to collect from encumbered property. You're only allowed to collect from unencumbered property. Same conversation that we just had a couple of lines ago. Same answer, that's part and parcel of the Tanai based in that you can only collect from Nechasim Bnei Chorin, but not from Nechasim Mishubadim. So that was the view of Ula. That Ula, in the name of Reish Lakish, said the reason that you are not allowed to collect the Shvach Karkos, the Peros, the Mazanish of Abanos from the Chasim Mishabadim is because they're not written down, because you didn't accept Akrayas. Now, Rav Chanina is going to come and give a different pshat. Rav Chanina Amar Lafisha Ein Ktsuvin. The reason that you're not allowed to collect from subsequent purchasers of property is not because they're not written down, it's because there is no set amount of liability that you know that you're on the hook for. Because think of it, the problem is, if you buy land, let's say if a person sells land to somebody else for $100, anybody else who buys land from the seller knows that there is a risk that the buyer of the land for $100 may come back to everybody else and try to collect from everybody else if that sale's reversed. But they know that the liability is $100. What if the land produces payros? Well, they have no idea how much payros the land is going to produce. So they don't know how much risk they're incurring on themselves. Similarly, if a person has an obligation to support his wife and his kids, they don't know what the quantum of that liability is. They don't know how much the support obligation is going to be, and therefore they don't know how much risk they're assuming, and therefore they will never agree to assume that risk. There is a machlokas, therefore, what happens if you do write down in the shtar? In other words, the first answer was because they're not written down. Let's say you do write down that you're obligated for peros or mozanisha babonos. Can you then collect from the encumbered property, even though they're not katsav, even though there's no set amount? So then it depends on what the issue is. If the issue is that because they're not katsav, therefore there is no kol, therefore people don't know about it, but if you wrote it down, then people do know about it, so l'chori should be able to collect. If the problem with not being katsav, with not having a set amount, is that I simply don't know the quantum of liability, well then even if it's written down, you still don't know the quantum of liability, and therefore if it's not katsav, you shouldn't be able to collect. So that's a machlokas rishonim within the shita of Rabbi Chanina. So again, Reish Lakish said the problem is that they're not written down. Rabbi Chanina says the problem is that they're not set, that we don't know the quantum of liability, and that's why you can't go after encumbered property, you can only go after unencumbered property. Yibailuhu, Rabbi Chanina, ksuvim uksuvim bai. According to Rabbi Chanina, do you require a set amount of liability and that liability has to be written down in order to permit you to collect from the chasim mishubadim, odilma ketsuvim vafal pishein ketsuvim? Or maybe once the liability is set in a sum certain, then you are allowed to collect even though they are not written down. And Rashi says that this is therefore like a milva alpeh, which is ksuva, like a loan which is not written, which is not evidenced by a shtar, or milva alpeh, which is for a set amount you could collect from nechasim mishubadim. Tosfa says, I don't know what in the world Rashi's talking about. The halacha throughout Shas is that the only time you're allowed to collect from nechasim mishubadim is by a milva bishtar. By a milva alpeh, you're never allowed to collect from nechasim mishubadim, even if you know the amount of the milva. So Tosfos has no idea what Rashi is talking about, and therefore he says that we're not talking about a milva alpeh. We're talking about a situation where you commit to supporting your wife and kids for 5 years. Ah, so that's ketsuvim, even though it's not written down. It's not written down because there's not evidence in a shtar, but it's set because you know that you're going to have to support the wife and kids for 5 years. The Rambam comes and says, I don't know what Tosfos is talking about, because even though you've told me that the support obligation is going to run for a 5-year period. Does anybody have any idea how much money it's going to cost to support the wife and kids for 5 years? No. And therefore, the whole point of not being katzub, it's not that I don't know the duration of the support obligation, it's that I don't know the quantum of the support obligation. So comes the Rambam, and the Rambam says, Tosfos didn't like Rashi's pshat, I don't like Tosfos' pshat, because in none of these cases is it really going to be katzub. Okay, but that was the question. The question is, within the Shita of Rav Chanina, does it have to be set and written down? Or once it's set, even if it's not written down, can you collect from Nechasim Mishabadim? The Gemara is going to try to bring a raya. Tashma, Dietmar, Misha Meis Veniach Shnei Banos, Uben. If a person dies and leaves over one son and two daughters, now the son gets Yerusha, the daughters make her Midine Torah, the way the Yerusha works in the Torah. Dafyomi coincidence, because we talk about the Benos Salafkot, or we mention them at least in the Parsha, so this is a great Dafyomi coincidence. So the son gets the Yerusha, the daughters, Midine Torah, don't get any Yerusha. What they get is they get what's called Iser Nechasim. They get 1/10 of all of the Nechasim that the father has for them to use as a dowry ultimately whenever they get married. So that's the halacha. So if a person dies and he leaves over two daughters and a son, the Kadma HaRishon of Anotla Iser Nechasim, and one of the daughters goes and takes her 10th of the estate in order to use as her dowry. The second daughter never got to collect her Iser Nechasim, but in the meantime, the son died. So now the din is, if the son died, says the Torah in this week's Parsha, so now that he doesn't have any sons, now the daughters get to divide the whole Yerusha. So Amar Rav Yochanan Shnia Vitra. The second one, she gave up on her Iser Nechasim. In other words, the first one got to collect the 10th, then the son died. Now, whatever's left is going to be divided equally among the two daughters. Even though the first daughter got the 1/10, the second daughter didn't get the 1/10. And says Rashi, the reason that she's mevater is because the whole reason for the takana of Iser Nechasim is so that the girl has a dowry for when she gets married. But over here, the girl is going to have a dowry for when she gets married, because in the meantime, the brother died, and now this girl is going to get half of the Yerusha, so she's going to have a dowry when she gets married. So says the Gemara of Amrle Rav Chanina Gdolami Zu Amru, that more than this we said, that Motzi'in Lefarnasa, that we are able to be Motzi Melekuchos, we're able to be Motzi from Nechasim Mishabadim for Parnasa. Parnasa is the Iser Nechasim, to collect the 10th of the estate in order for the girl to use as a dowry. Ve'motzi'in Lemazonos. But you are not able to be motzi milakuchos in order to fund the support obligation. Viat amrat shnia vitra, and you're going to tell me that the second daughter is going to be mevater because she hadn't yet had the opportunity to collect the iser nechasim from the yerusha, from the estate, before the brother died, and now she's going to get half of it as a yerusha. But says Rashi, if let's say the son never died, she would be able to go and collect from a lokeach of the father in order to get the Iser Nechasim. She could go collect from a third party, from Nechasim Mishabadim. So you're telling me that she could collect from a third party, but if the money is sitting right there, she's not entitled to take her 10th off the top before they divide the Yerusha equally? That doesn't make any sense. But Parnasa, to make us kayets. Now Parnasa, why are we talking about all this? For the following reason. Vaparnasa, the Parnasa, which is the 1/10 of the Nechasim, to make us kayets. We know the amount because it's 1/10 of whatever the nechasim are. Michtav loksivi. It's not written down. V'kamotziya. And we said that you were allowed to be motzi from nechasim mishabadim. So isn't this a raya that once it's katsav, even if it's eino katsav, you're allowed to collect from nechasim mishabadim? Says the Gemara, no raya. Shani parnasa. Kima dislokolo kamanda ksiva dami. Because everybody knows about the concept of iser nechasim. Even though technically it's not written down, it's as if it's written down. So we tried bringing a raya from here, that as long as an obligation is set into some certain, even if it's not written down, you could collect from Nechasim Mishubadim. What we're saying is, you have no raya from here, because even though technically it's not written down, it's as if it's written down, because everybody knows that this obligation exists. Most of Rav Huna Bar Manoach asks as follows. Mesu, if they die, and what are we talking about over here? What are we talking about over here by Mesu? So by Mesu, we're talking about if a person marries a woman on the condition that he is going to support her daughter for a 5-year period. In other words, a guy marries a woman. The woman has a daughter from a prior marriage. So the guy, the new husband, takes upon himself the obligation to support his wife's daughter for a five-year period. She's not his child, she's a stepchild, but he takes upon himself the obligation to support the daughter for a five-year period. Then he gets divorced within that five-year period. But he's on the hook because he took upon himself the obligation to support for 5 years. Then, says Rashi, she gets remarried to somebody else, and now presumably it's this woman's third husband, and the woman's third husband, but the second guy that we're talking about in this scenario, he also takes upon himself the obligation to support the woman's daughter for a five-year period. So what happens? So says Rashi, what we learn is that echad zana v'echad nosin lo demei mizonos. That that one of them actually provides mizonos to the daughter, and the other has to give her the value of the mizonos because they both took upon themselves the obligation to support the daughter for a five-year period. And therefore, mesu, and therefore, if both of these men die, then benosehen nizonos minichasa minichorin, their own daughters can only be supported from the unencumbered assets that these guys have. Reading Rashi, Kitaktani Masnisan, Emotsian Lamozan, Ishavabanos, Minachasim Ishabadim. However, the daughter, says back in the Gemara, Mesu, if these people die, then Benoseim, their own daughters, Nizonos, Minachasim Echorin, because Mazan Ishavabanos is only collected from Nachasim Echorin, unencumbered property, non encumbered property. Meaning the daughter of the wife, who both of these guys committed to supporting for 5 years, Nizonos Menachasim Mishabadim, Mibneshi Kabalas Chov. And because she is like a Balas Chov. Now, what do we see here? We see that the obligation to support the wife's daughter for a 5 year period is collectible from Nechasim Mishabadim, even though it was never written down. So we see that this is Katsav, this is actually a riot to what Tosfos says, right? That if you are obligated to support somebody for 5 years, that it is katsav, not like the Rambam, well, that it's not katsav because you still don't know what the exact quantum of the liability is. But over here, we have an obligation to support the daughter for 5 years, and because that obligation is katsav, you're allowed to collect from the chasam mishabadim, even though it's not written down. So isn't this a raya that if it's katsav, even if it's not katsav, you're allowed to collect from the chasam mishabadim? Says the Gemara, no, hakav mayaskina b'shakona miyado, you made a kinyan. In other words, and when you make a kinyan to evidence the support obligation, that's as if it is written down. So this is as good as written down. So says the Gemara, Ihachi banos nami bishakanu, banos nami. So in that case, wait, why did the husband's own daughters only get supported from unencumbered property, but the wife's daughter is going to be supported from encumbered property? Aren't we talking about a case where you made a kinyan to evidence the support obligation in favor of everybody? Says the Gemara, "Bishakana lazu v'lo kana mizu," because you only made a kinyan to evidence the support obligation for the stepdaughter, for the wife's daughter, but you never made a kinyan to evidence the support obligation of their own daughters. So says the Gemara, "My paska, why in the world would you make a kinyan to evidence the support obligation for the wife's daughter, but you would not make a kinyan to evidence the support obligation for your own daughter?" So bas ishto dahavi b'shas kinyan mahani lo kinyan. Because the wife's daughter, who was here when they made the kinyan, she was already born when they got married, therefore mahani lo kinyan. Bito, his own daughter, who presumably was born after the two of them got married, and he took upon himself the obligation, Dolahavi Bishas Kinyan, who was not there at the time of marriage, lo mahani lo kinyan. The kinyan doesn't help for them. But says the Gemara, Bamilo Askinan Davi Tarvayu Bishas Kinyan. So, but what if we're talking about a case, or why don't we say that we're talking about a case where both his own daughter and his wife's daughter were both there at the Shas Kinyan at the time that they got married? How could it be that his own daughter is there at the time that they got married? Says the Gemara, Vechadami, the Garsha, Vahadra, they were previously married. They had a daughter from a common daughter from their previous marriage. In the meantime, then they got divorced. The wife happened to have had another daughter from another marriage. Then they get remarried. So now he has his own daughter plus his wife's daughter. They're both here at the Shas Kinyan. They're both here when he assumes the obligation at the time of marriage. So why do we say that he's only assuming the obligation? He's only making a kinyan in favor of the wife's daughter, but he's not making a kinyan in favor of his own daughter. Says the Gemara, Elabito de Pitnai Basin Kachlo Lomahani Lo Kinyan. Because his own daughter he's obligated to support because of a Tanai Basin. The Tanai Basin is that it's written into the Ksuva that he's going to support his daughter, therefore the kinyan that he makes is not going to help. Bas Ishto de Lav Bitnai Basin Kachla Mahani Lo Kinyan. The wife's daughter, because there is no built-in Tanai based into the Ksuba, obligating him to support his wife's daughter, the Kinyan is going to help. Says the Gemara, that is totally backwards. So, V'chi Migra Gara, you're going to say that his own daughter, where there's an actual Tanai Basin that we're going to enforce on him, an obligation to support his own daughter, somehow his own daughter is worse off than his wife's daughter, where there is no Tanai Basin, there's no requirement that he support her, but there's only a voluntary assumption of liability. The voluntary assumption of liability shouldn't be as strong as a Tanai Basin obligating him to support his own daughter. Says the Gemara, you're right. Elabito kiva the Tanai Basin kakla imar tsrari atvase. The reason that you're not allowed to collect mazon habanos, the obligation to support his own daughter, from the chasim mishubadim, is that because it's the Tanai Basin, we assume he was very eager to satisfy that Tanai Basin. We assume he was very eager to satisfy that obligation, so we assume that he already fulfilled it, that he already paid the mazon ishav habanos. So why can't you collect from the chasim mishubadim in order to collect mazon ishav habanos? Because we're afraid it was already paid for. His wife's daughter, where there's no Tanai based in, it was only a voluntary assumption of liability. We don't have to be afraid that he already paid the support obligation. Therefore, that can be satisfied from Nechasim Mishubadim. Okay, says the Gemara now weiter. Tashma, Amrav Nasan, Imasai Bizman Shakadam Mekcho Shol Sheni Lishvacho Shol Rishon. Back to the case that we began the daf with. The scenario where the guy bought land from a buyer, buys land from a seller. Turns out that the seller is selling hot property. He's selling stolen property. Comes the original owner of the property and confiscates it from the buyer. And now the buyer is looking to the seller to make him whole. So the buyer can take either from the seller or the seller's other buyers the amount that he paid for the actual property, because that's nechasim sheyesh lamachrayas. However, the payros that grew on the property, those cannot be collected from the nechasim mishubadim. Those can only be connected from nechasim nechorim. But says the Gemara now qualifies that halacha. Emesai b'zman shekada mekhal shal sheni l'shvacha shal rishon. That's only if the other buyers bought other properties from the seller before the buyer of the stolen property actually enhanced the property. Aval kodam shivcha shal rishon l'mekhal shal sheni govim nechasim mishubadim. However, if the shevach of the Rishon, if first the buyer of the stolen property improved the land before the buyer of the other properties from the seller bought their land, then you can collect from Nechasim Mishubadim. Why? Because, says Rashi, everybody knows that you buy ba'achrayas. Everybody knows that every sale is with achrayas. And therefore, if Levi buys a piece of property from Reuven, but Levi knows that Shimon previously bought a piece of property from Reuven, and now when Levi is going into that transaction, he sees that the piece of property that Shimon bought is this beautiful piece of property which is improved. He's going to assume that he's on the hook for the entire value of that piece of property, not only the base level property, but also the enhanced value of that property as well. Says the Gemara, so Alma Mishum Delo Kodim. So it's mashma from here that it's not tully in katsuv at all. It seems like it's tully whether you were first in time. If the enhancement of the property predated the other purchase, then you're allowed to collect from nechasim mishubadim. If the enhancement of the property did not predate the other purchase, then you're not allowed to collect for the enhancement from nechasim mishubadim. Very simple. So what are you hakami katsuv? It's very simple. Look at who's first in time. It says the Gemara, Tanoi, he it's a machlokas tanoim. The Tanya, ein motziin lachilas peros l'shava karkos l'mozin ish v'abanosh menachashim mishabadim v'bnei tikkun olam, because of tikkun olam. Lefisha ein ksuvim, it's because it's not kasa, because it's not written down. And number of Yosef, v'chima tikkun olam yesh b'zuv alo ein ksuvim, that there's no tikkun olam aspect in the fact that it's not written down. Rather, the reason is because they are not set. And the reason is because the amount is not necessarily going to be set. And therefore we see that just like there's this machlokas tanoim, katsuv, there's also a shita that says that we're not going to pay attention to kasuv or katsuv, that the reason that, because we see that there's a shita that says v'chima tikkun olam yesh b'zu, so there is a shita that holds that it's not an inyan of tikkun olam at all, rather we have to focus on whether the shevach of the karka predated or postdated the other purchasers who bought property from the original seller. Okay. So that was all about Shvach Karkos and Mozen Isha Vabanos. Now the Mishnah wrapped up by telling us that Amotzi Metzia Lo Yishava, that if a person finds a Metzia, he doesn't have to swear. What type of Shvuah are we talking about? We're talking about a Shvuah Motav Mikzas because of Tikkun HaOlam. So a person doesn't have to take a Shvuah Motav Mikzas even if he's returning half of what the owner of the lost object claims he lost. The finder doesn't have to take a shvua because of Tikkun HaOlam. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Shnei Kisim Kshurim Matzasali. If somebody says, you found two wallets that are tied together, two sacks of money, V'alo Omer Lo Matzasi Ela Echad, and the finder says, no, I only found one, Nishpa, then he's going to have to take a shvua. Shnei Shvarim Kshurim Matzasali. If the guy Tainas that you found two of my oxen which were tied together, Valo Omer, and the finder says, Lo Haya Ela Echa, there was only one, Einishvan, then he doesn't have to swear. So my Taima, Shvarim Misnatchi Me'adadi, Kisin Lo Misnatchi Me'adadi, because oxen are prone to separating from one another, wallets are not prone to separating from one another. And therefore, the point is, Rashi says that therefore, when the person who lost the two oxen says, you found two of my oxen, that's not a Tainas Bari. That's not a certain Taina. That's a Taina Shema. Because the owner doesn't know for sure that the finder found two of the oxen, because for all he knows, the oxen may have separated from one another before the finder found them. However, when the person who lost the object says, you found two of my money pouches, that's a Tainas Bari, because there's no way for the money pouches to separate from one another, and therefore he's approaching with a Tainas Bari, and in response to the Tainas Bari, the Motza Metzia is going to have to take a Shvua. We see in Maseches Beitza that sometimes the string that holds together the two wallets, the two pouches of money, might break, and therefore the money might separate from one another. So why do you say that only oxen separate, but money pouches don't separate from one another? So says Tosfos, because over there in Maseches Beitza, we know for sure that there were two pouches there initially. Over here, we have no idea how many pouches this guy found. Therefore, we would assume that they didn't. In other words, we assume that the guy found whatever there was. We don't assume that they separated like that. Where Shvarim, they walk apart from each other. Therefore, they're going to separate. Says the Gemara. So says the Gemara. Shnei Shvarim Kshurim Matzasi. Back in the Gemara, four lines up from the bottom of the Yamud, if a person says, you found two of my oxen, v'alo omar matzasi v'exarti l'cha, echa ma'am, and the guy says, yeah, I found them and I return one of them to you, hareza nishpa. Then he has to take a shvua because it's a shvua's modav mikzas. Says the Gemara, v'rav Yitzchak lesle amotzi mitziya lo yishavim neitek an olam, read our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that if a person finds a lost object, he doesn't have to take a shvua's modav mikzas because of Tikkun HaOlam. So says the Gemara, Hu da'amar k'Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He holds, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, explains Rashi, that when the owner of the object approaches him with a Tainas Bari, that you for sure found two of my objects, and he says, no, I only found one, that's not considered to be a Meshev Aveda. In other words, he agrees that a Meshev Aveda doesn't have to take a Shvua, but he doesn't agree that this is considered to be a Meshev Aveda. In other words, Meshev Aveda means if you don't know that you lost your wallet, and I go over to you and say, hey, I found your wallet, and here's $50 that was in the wallet, then and you say, oh no, there was $100 in the wallet, I don't have to take a Shvua, because without me returning your wallet to you, you never would have found your wallet at all, and therefore you cannot force me to take a Shvua. However, over here, that's not what happened. The guy comes to the finder with a taina, you found my two oxen. And he says, no, I only found one and I returned it. You're responding now to a taina's bari. That's not considered to be a Meshev Aveda. You're responding to a taina. Says the Gemara, Datanya, we see this machlokas as follows. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, Pamim shadam nishbal tainas atzmo. There are some times when a person will take a shvua because of a taina of himself, of his own. Ketzad, what situation is this? Mana la avicha biyadi v'chaltiv pras. If a person says that I owed your father $100 and I paid him $50. Hareza nishba, that he has to take a shvua. Vezeu shenishba al tainas atzmo. And this is a scenario where he's swearing al tainas atzmo. Then he would consider this tainas atzmo. Elazar ben Yaakov will consider this tainas atzmo because he is telling the son of the lender, and the lender is no longer with us. He's telling the son of the lender, I borrowed $100 from your father, but I already paid him back $50. So the son has no clue. He has no clue what's flying. He doesn't know that the father loaned the guy $100 and the guy paid back $50. That's considered to be tainas atzmo because nobody's bothering him for the money. The Chachamim say, no, he's like a Meshav Aveda. He's volunteering that he still owes or that he paid back $50 to this guy's father. Therefore, he's a Meshav Aveda. You're not going to force him to take a shvua. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, let's say Meshav Aveda Potter. What is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Shita? He doesn't hold that Meshav Aveda's Potter. It's on our Mishnah. It says, Amotzi Mitzia lo yishava m'netik an olam. So Meshav Aveda, somebody who returns a lost object, should be Potter from a shvua. So Mara, beton or katan. He's not a Meshav Aveda because he's responding to a taina, because the katan was towing that he owes him money. So katan, midi meshash eshbe. Does the katan have the strength to really make a taina? That's not a legitimate taina. Vatnan, einish ban al tainas chereshot of a katan. We don't force a guy to take a shvua in response to a tainas chereshot of a katan. So we're asking, why do you force this guy to take a shvua? I is like a Meshav Aveda. Oh no, the reason that he has to take a shvua is because the katan is towing. But if the katan is toying, you viter don't have to take a shvua. The katan says the Gemara, my katan gadol. No, it's really a gadol. Vamai korele katan. Why do we call him a katan? The legabe mila de aviv katanu. Because legabe, the affairs of his father, he doesn't really know what's flying. Therefore, he's considered to be a katan. Says the Gemara, iachi tainas atzmo. We said that this is an example of somebody who swears al tainas atzmo. This is not tainas atzmo. Tainas acheramu. This is a tainas acheram. Somebody else is being toying that he owes his father money. Says the Gemara, Tainas Acheram Vadas Atzmo. Oh, you're right. We didn't mean that it's Tainas Atzmo. We mean that somebody else is towing and he's admitting. Says the Gemara, hello, that's the case of Moda B'Miksas. So Tainas Kulu Tainas Kulu Tainas Kulu Tainas Anami Tainas Acheram Vadas Atzmo Ninu. The classic case of Moda B'Miksas is where somebody is claiming that he's owed 100 and you say, no, I only owe you 50. Says the Gemara, Ella, that let's not say that we're talking about where a gadol was towing. Let's say that we're talking about where a katan was towing. And I thought that we don't swear because of a taina of a katan. So that's only by a taina of a shvuas hapikadon. Because the pasuk says ki itein ish v'lo katan. However, if the person is coming on account of a loan that was owed to his father, maybe we would have to take a shvua. So Ella, but the Rabba Kamifli, they're arguing about Rabba. Diyama Rabba, Neima Amro Torah, Modu B'miksa Satani Yishava. Why psychologically? Why do we make a Modu B'miksa, somebody who admits to partial liability? Why do we make him take a shvua? Because Chazaka Ina the Meis Panim of Neibal Chova. Because we have a Chazaka that a person is not going to be Meis Panim. A person doesn't have the brazenness to totally deny that he owes money to somebody. So if somebody goes over to somebody else and says, you owe me $100, we don't assume that the other guy is going to flat out deny it. Really, he would deny everything. But a person's constitution, a person's moral compass won't allow him to totally deny it. Really, he probably wants to deep down do the right thing and admit that he owes the full $100. He's just stalling him. And he's figuring, oh, you know what, let me stall him until I come into the money, then I'll pay him back. So what the Torah says is, I'm going to make him take a shvua modu b'miktas, because really we believe that he owes the entire amount. Because it's not considered to be like a Meshav Aveda, because he simply would never deny the whole amount anyway, because his moral fortitude, his moral constitution wouldn't allow him to do that. He is not admitting the whole thing because he's trying to stall. So we say, you know what, we're going to make him take a shvua, hoping that he'll wind up admitting to the whole thing. Rav Lozer ben Yaakov says, Lo shna bo, v'lo shna b'bno ein ameyes, that a person would not be meyes panim of b'nei bal chovo, whether the lender himself is coming and claiming that he owes him money, or whether the lender's son is coming and claiming that he owes him money. Ve'ilkach lav meshav avedahu. Therefore, if he's responding to a taina, he's not considered to be a meshav aveda. He's not doing it out of the largesse. He's not doing it out of his own generosity. He's responding to a taina. And the reason that he would never deny it is because Ein Adam Meis Panav. In other words, he didn't have the option of denying it. So when he admits to owing half, it's not like he's returning a lost object. That's the most that his conscience will let him do. Vilkach lav meishav avedu v'rabbanan savri bo hu deina meis avol bibno meis. No, Ein Adam Meis Panav Ein Baal Chovo means that a person is not going to be Meis Panav in front of somebody who knows that he's lying. This guy, the kid, doesn't know whether the guy's lying or not because the kid is only a kid. He has no idea what's flying. And because he would ordinarily have the ability to be meis panav and deny everything, but he's not denying everything. He's admitting to half of it. That's why he's a meishav aveda. And according to the chachamim, he's going to be potter, even though according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, he admits that a meishav aveda is potter, but he says that this is not a case of meishav aveda. Okay, so I am gone for the next week. Rabbi Michael Weichselbaum will be giving the daf here in Shir until next Friday morning. He will be Zooming it. I am back from vacation next Thursday night. I'll, God willing, return for Daf Nuntes next Friday. Hope everybody has a wonderful day and an easy fast. Right. I'm from Yitzchak, safe flight home.